real food.
Good. Well, I look forward to reading that. And again, I want to thank you for taking your time. And as always, I look forward to reading your articles in Education Week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
And I would like to thank all of you for listening to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD HD. I've been your host today, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
And good morning, I'm Jim McClure, and our guest this week on Community Matters is Nate Bond, the Veteran Services Officer for Walworth County. And Nate, welcome back for, I think, is your fourth time now? People are talking.
It is the fourth time, Jim, but it's all positive talk, at least. It's great to be here, Jim. Thank you so much for the chance to speak with you and your listeners.
Always enjoy it. Don't forget the fifth time you'll get your robe and the membership in the club. We'll get a monogram that says CM for Community Matters on it. Nate, how long have you been in the position now of Veteran Services Officer? I know you were, in effect, the deputy for a number of years.
So I worked for Christine Jordan for 2 years, and then last year she left right around this time. We did our transition. So it's been a year now since I started as the Veteran Service Officer.
What's it been like? You don't look like you've gotten a lot of sleep in that a year or so.
You know, it's the busiest little office in all of Walworth County. There are other offices, obviously, that are very busy as well. But our four-person now office is definitely extremely active. We have, right around 10,000 veterans in Walworth County, 7,500 of whom are receiving federal services. But then another number who are getting either state or direct county assistance as well, not to mention widows and orphans of veterans who are also eligible for services. So we stay pretty busy.
One would think, as so many of the generation from World War II and Korea are passing on to their eternal reward, that your job would get easier, but I guess historically we've had a few other skirmishes since then. Who makes up the bulk from what conflicts or what eras come in? It's got to be pretty Cold War-based now, I would imagine.
Well, yes. There are still a few World War II veterans that we're helping, and their widows are certainly a large population for us to care for. Korean War is certainly an active group who are seeking the benefits, mostly health care benefits. I see a lot of people who need hearing aids, including myself. But that's
what was that? Sorry, I couldn't quite hear you, Nate.
Yeah. our Korean War veterans are now in their 80s and are looking for health care benefits. And also at their long-term care benefits, such as nursing home or assisted living benefits. The VA has a pension, of course, that helps offset the costs of nursing home and in-home care and assisted living care. And so we do a lot of assistance for applying for those pensions, not only for the veteran, but for the surviving spouse of veterans as well.
I'm hoping that today in our time together we can knock down a lot of myths and a lot of misinformation and non-information. I imagine you still get a lot of, gee, I didn't know you were here. Why are you here? You mean I can actually get a little something for Dad? And then it turns out Dad can get a lot of something. As a nation, as a state, as a county, are we still pretty clueless about what that initial commitment and promise was to veterans, regardless of what the nature of their service was?
In many ways, we do. I think it's a nature of the people who join the military, especially those who volunteered. They're a very independent group. I mean, they joined out of a sense of patriotism and a sense of duty, and they were doing their job. And even those who were drafted, a lot of the guys drafted for Korea and Vietnam, they feel like, well, I did my part and I got a paycheck, and that's all I need. But we, the people of the United States, made a commitment to these men and women. And part of that commitment was, you know, when you are joining the military, we are doing that physical. Jim, you remember that physical you did where you had to duck walk naked around with about 150 other guys, and the doctor would point at you, you, 1A, 1A.
I didn't like what was coming, and frankly, I didn't like after it was done.
No, exactly. So, but that physical and the 1A stamp, you know, you're in perfectly good health. And we, the people, made a contract with those men and women who joined saying, when you leave the service, you're going to be in perfectly good health, or we're going to compensate you or your loved ones for that lack of health. And so that's my job, making sure that we, the people, fulfill our contract with these men and women who served.
Now, are you a federal employee, a state employee? You reside in the old county building.
I am a county employee. Wisconsin is one of many states that each county has a county veteran service officer. And Wisconsin has it codified right there in the statutes, Chapter 45 of the revised statutes. Each county will have a county veteran service officer. And so I am a county employee. I do most of my work through organizations like the American Legion and the VFW and the Military Order of the Purple Heart. They're the ones who accredit me and my assistants so that we can help people submit claims to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Those organizations have congressional charters where they are given permission to look in on the VA and make sure that things are going well and represent veterans to the VA. And each one of us at the office is accredited with at least one of those agencies, including the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, which is also a very good organization for helping out veterans when it comes to their federal benefits. I'm a county employee. My paycheck comes from the people of Walworth County.
And there's no slacking off in your office, because if I recall the layout in, I call it the old county building, but it's very much the present county administrative building on the square in downtown Elkhorn. You can't be more than about 10 yards from Dave Brettel, the county administrator, right across the hall.
Right, and Nancy Russell comes in on a regular basis to do her job as the county's
board chairman.
Board chair, and we have great neighbors there in the building. But you know, the great thing about working for David and for Nancy and the board, they allow us a lot of autonomy. There's oversight, obviously, but David is very good about codifying that those oversight procedures, and so the expectations are very clear, and you just have to follow those expectations. You know, and David's philosophy for the county of serving the people. That's his whole point. Do your best to serve the customer, and so. It's great having David as a boss. I never want to let that guy down, for sure.
And an active boss, too. I know that Dave served in, I believe, the Army and the National Guard. I think in either artillery division, but he was also in the accounting end of things to make things running. But it is hard to go to a veteran event or a military event in the county and not see Dave. But in the background.
Yes.
In the background. If you didn't know him, you wouldn't realize that the guy who pretty much helps the county keep running, both legally and administrator, was among those of us who served and cares.
Yeah, he's definitely the epitome of the quiet professional. He is. I truly admire David. I really do. His demeanor. But his professionalism, his knowledge of what he's doing and what the people of the county need. And I think if you just look at our current budget and the fact that we're going to be a debt-free county here this year, speaks volumes to his and the board's commitment to the people of this county. It's truly remarkable what they've done, and I love working there. I love working there because I've got a great boss and I've got a great board to serve and a great group of people here in the county to serve. But I'll tell you what, when I can come in the morning and know that I'm going to make a positive difference in somebody's life every single day, that's a great reason to get up in the morning.
Do a lot of your meetings go that way too, where someone comes in just absolutely stressed and worried? How am I going to get Dad buried? How am I going to help my brother out? How am I going to make it through? My husband's gone now, and he's not coming home. How do a lot of these meetings start, and how do a lot of them end?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Jim, we do see the harder side of life for people. Quite often, people come to us desperate. Really, they've tried all these avenues, and someone finally said, "Well, did your dad serve in the military, or did grandma serve?" And, well, yeah, why don't you go down to the veterans office and see what they have for you? And so we're almost like the last resort place people go to, which is unfortunate because I really feel like we should be the first stop. Because even if we don't have the solution, I'll find it. That's a philosophy we've taken over from Christine. When someone comes through that door, their goal, their problem, that's our goal. That's our problem. We're going to get it solved. We're going to get to that goal for that person. And so, yes, for instance, hey, Dad's a World War II veteran, and he's living at home, and we're kind of concerned about his ability to take care of himself, but he doesn't really want to go to an assisted living facility, and he certainly doesn't want to go to a nursing home. What have you got for us? Oh, you know, we've got some options. There's this VA pension because he's a wartime veteran, and we can help offset the cost of an in-home visiting nurse. We can get him into the VA healthcare system. That kind of reduces his cost for any medical coverage. And it's just amazing to see the change in a person's confidence when they're like, oh, I don't have to do this all alone. There's somebody here that's willing to help us. There are government programs. And like I said, it's a contract between we the people and those individual veterans. We've made that commitment, and the money's there. And there are some guys who are like, well, you know, there's someone who needs it more. I'm like, well, maybe, but, you know, we're already $21 trillion in debt. The $3,000 a month for you isn't really going to break the bank. And, oh, by the way, you earned it. So here, let's help take care of that.
You know, we're speaking today in part through the good offices of Calvary Community Church in Williams Bay. And just this past month, they had their patriotic celebration. And, in fact, a lot of churches around here are starting to do that. And it features a color guard that is made up not necessarily of the young and the bold, but the people who served through. And you literally see every generation from the young man back from Afghanistan in his digital camis to gentlemen that still fit in their sailor suits and their Marine Corps uniforms and Air Force and Coast Guard. And it's not only a representation of our military, but our generations. And why don't we go through those generations? Let's start with the young man, the person who signed up 3 years ago and is just getting out now. I mean, when do you first realize you're a veteran? And as a veteran yourself, how does it feel when all of a sudden you're out of the service? And when should you be dropping by your veteran service office, even when you're fresh back?
Yeah, when you're fresh back is the first, should be your second stop. Home and, you know, mom and apple pie, and then come over to the county courthouse, please. to the old county courthouse, to the government center, to the veteran service office, because that is the first place that we'll get your DD Form 214, your military discharge document. We'll get it recorded at the courthouse so it could never get lost. You know, back in 1973, 74, in the National Archives, the huge fire that destroyed almost all Army Korean War veterans' records. What a disaster for those individuals. Fortunately, there were some places where the draft boards and things like that had records of them being in, so they were able to recreate some of the records, but not all of them. Well, let's make sure that doesn't happen. If you record your DD 214 at our office, there's a backup somewhere for you, both digitally and physically there at the courthouse, the government center. So definitely bring that over, if for no other reason. Learn about your education benefits. Learn about your medical benefits. And mostly, a lot of these young guys don't, you know, they're 22 years old and they're perfectly healthy, and what do they care? Well, because someday you're going to be 82 years old and you'll care. Or, you know, 42, 52, you'll care. That twisted ankle that you thought was done and over with when you were walking through the dry stream beds of Afghanistan, and you twisted your ankle and your knee and you put an ACE bandage and took some ibuprofen and you kept driving on. Well, when you're 22, you can do that. But that ankle and that knee will start to hurt when you're 42, trust me. And it would be nice to get that on the record sooner rather than later. Get you into the VA, get you into physical therapy, get things working for you now rather than waiting when you really need it and it's kind of late in the process and it's going to take time. Let's get that kind of thing taken care of right away.
For the younger vet, we'll also get to the obvious of possible employment, but before that, the not so obvious, at least to me, education. Is there any crossing of T's and I's that need to be dotted when you get home and you're thinking, geez, you know, maybe I should go to Gateway Tech to finish that kind of training I had, or to get up to speed in another profession? How much do you help with educational matters for the young veteran?
Well, we do quite a bit for educational purposes. There are several programs that, especially as a Wisconsin resident, people qualify for. There's obviously the post 9/11 GI Bill that people are qualified for, depending on which component of the active service they were in. If they were a National Guard member who went on active duty for a deployment, they not only have their National Guard benefits, but now they have active duty soldier benefits. Guys who did their four-year enlistment in the active duty and are now getting out and possibly going into the Reserve or National Guard, they not only have their post 9/11 GI Bill benefits, but they also have the Wisconsin GI Bill. The Wisconsin GI Bill is a wonderful program where it pays tuition and fees for those who served on active duty who were residents of Wisconsin. And it's an amazing program. And if they're disabled, if they have a VA disability rating of 30% or more, not only do they get to go to a University of Wisconsin System school or technical college, their children get to go. Their spouse gets to go. Tuition and fees paid. And that is just the people of Wisconsin are so generous in that way. And so there's so many different options when it comes to educational benefits that even the really bright young man or bright young woman coming back should sit down with me or with John or Joni in my office and kind of go through the, like you said, dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure they're getting the maximum amount of benefit that they've already earned.
Are there things that can be reversed if you goofed up and when you got your packet 3 months before you were going to muster out and you didn't bother to fill out any of that stuff? Do you sometimes have to backfill and
say it ain't so. That doesn't happen. That never happens. Oh man. Well, that's quite a bit of the work that we get to do. Because I remember when I was getting out, and even though I was a career guy, and I just wanted to get out. But knowing the importance of it at the time, I methodically went through the step-by-step process. But when you're 22 years old and you've done your 4 years and you're getting out, the last thing on your mind is medical benefits when I'm in my 30s. So a lot of these young men and women don't bother to go through the step-by-step methodical process of making sure that their benefits packet is good to go. So, yes, we do a lot of remodeling. What's the word I'm looking at? Refit.
Refit.
Kind of getting things back into the right order. And I've done a couple of disability claims for men who have been and women who have been hurt while in service, and they didn't bother to go through the steps before they left the service, and now they're kind of in a, there's no one there to help them. What do I do? Well, that's what our office is there for, to help them. And we know the right words to use. We know the right forms to fill out. And we know the person to talk to on the other end of the line to get the application submitted properly. So please, if you find yourself 2 years out of the service and wondering what you should do about that bad back that you got because you were carrying a 150-pound rucksack through the mountains of Afghanistan, don't sit and think about it and wonder if you come into the office. We can help you. And, you know, that's the whole reason why I get a paycheck. So someone's like, this paperwork is so hard. And I'm like, yeah, but don't complain too loudly or I won't have a job.
Speaking about paychecks, there's got to be a lot said for what a veteran can bring to a new employer. What do you bring to the veteran who's looking for an employer and just can't connect?
You know, I was talking with the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners a little while ago. They have an office in Milwaukee, and they're all over the country, of course. But they were like, we love veterans. I'm like, well, why do you love veterans? And, well, they know how to get up in the morning and go to work. And I guess that's a problem for other people, but not for veterans, typically. So just some of those, they've been calling them soft skills in the market lately. Just some of those, they know how to dress appropriately for the job they're going to do. They know how to be on time. They're not making excuses for being sick. They're showing up to work. And I guess that's the number one complaint lately with the much derided millennial generation is, why do I have to be there at 7? Isn't 7:15 okay? Well, no, 7:15 is not okay. I'm paying you for be there at 7. Be there at 7. Whereas with young men and women who have served in the military, they understand that time is money. That time, being on time, makes a difference. It could, because in the military, when you're on a mission, being on time could cost somebody's life if you're not. So there's kind of this ingrained, drilled into you, you know, sense of duty and responsibility that your being on time affects everyone else.
And is there any kind of clearinghouse where, in effect, you're something of a job referral agency as well, or a way to find out about extra openings you might not otherwise?
So a lot of people do send us information about their job openings that they'd like veterans to know about. We also work very closely with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development and their local veterans employment representative, Mr. Al Garcia, who covers the three-county area, Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth County, and Mr. Napoleon Hardy, who's also a part of that process. And he often comes to Gateway Technical College, where there's the local office. So most definitely, I refer people over to DWD and the local veterans employment rep on a regular basis. But I also hand them business cards of people I know that are looking to hire veterans specifically. So if you're out there and you want to hire a veteran, please feel free to send me your business card or definitely talk with the Department of Workforce Development about hiring veterans.
Yeah, and that is becoming more of an issue for a lot of employers who they're having trouble getting things filled. The economy has improved enough that there are a lot of openings now that weren't there before. Well, Colonel Bond, we're at the halfway point where it's always a good idea to let people know who we are. If not, just to give the folks at the Federal Communications Commission reason to collect pay every day. So we will let you know that you are listening to your WPR, Wisconsin Public Radio affiliate for Lake Geneva, Elkhorn, and Racine, Kenosha. We're heard locally for our Walworth County listeners on 103.3 FM in Lake Geneva, 101.7 in Elkhorn, and Kenosha Racine, 91.1 FM. And around the world, and Nate, as we used to say, and all the ships at sea, on www.wgtd.org, your classical music and information station for southeastern Wisconsin. Our guest today on Community Matters is Lieutenant Colonel Nate Bond, a retired Army officer and, more importantly, Veteran Services Officer for Walworth County. And don't turn away that dial if you're not in Walworth County, because I'll tell you, Racine, Milwaukee, Kenosha County, Rock County, you name it, wherever you hear us from, Nate will have some stuff relative to your world if you have a relative or you yourself served in the military. There's lots of interest there. Nate, so we've talked about the younger veterans. Let's go on to the medium. It's as the healthcare issues prop up. How we doing there? What's the latest scorecard? There's always the scandal du jour about the person left waiting for the surgery they needed or whatever. But how are things improving, and how good or how bad do you have it if you happen to live in this area that's equidistant between VA hospitals in Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago?
Well, you know, there's always going to be complaints about every healthcare system, some of them legitimate and earned complaints, and some of them the anecdotal, well, my doctor said no and he should have said yes. The thing is, if your doctor, your VA doctor in Ohio says no when he should have said yes, it makes the news because it's the VA. But if the doctor down the street at, well, we won't name a hospital around here, that would be unfair.
But there are hospitals down the street, which is handy too.
Yes. And if they make a mistake, it makes the local news, but it certainly doesn't make CNN or Fox News. And so the VA does get somewhat of a bad rap. Yet the VA is, what I hear anecdotally from my veterans when they come in and talk to me, is just how wonderful they feel that they've been treated, how wonderfully they've been treated. Always talking about just the staff at each of the hospitals, be it the Zablocki VA Medical Center in Milwaukee or the Middleton VA Medical Center in Madison or even the James Lovell Federal Healthcare Center in North Chicago. Everyone is, I'm always hearing good things about those facilities, especially when it comes to just the fact that people are nice to them and always thanking them for their service and making sure that they've gotten the care that they needed that day. So we've got it pretty good here. Survey-wise, the Middleton VA Medical Center has been consistently in the top 10 of VA hospitals in the country. I've heard great things about Zablocki in Milwaukee as well. So I think we're doing pretty good around here. Now, not everybody qualifies for VA health care. If you served in the military for at least 24 months after 1980, and then you have to meet a certain economic threshold, that I can help people work through that situation. And then if you served prior to 1980 but served at least one day during a period of war or had at least 90 days active duty overall, and again meet those economic thresholds, then I can get you into the VA healthcare also. It's not that difficult a process. Just come see me. Please come see me so we can talk through the different eligibility requirements.
And what if, and I've heard some sad tales like this, the poor guy who, because he is the kind of person that signed up for military service, who wants to handle his own problems, and frankly, because of that nature, he's a little shy that after his first 90 days and his first boot camp and his first instructional school, that, you know, the day after he reported to his first assignment, he got hit by a Jeep and got a medical discharge. If you've punched those numbers and you made your 90 days or whatever it is, you have every bit, do you not, the same structure as the guy who you know, parachuted into Baghdad with a knife between his teeth with instructions to find out where Saddam Hussein had his morning coffee.
Well, thanks for that description of it, Jim.
It doesn't characterize your service, by the way.
No, that was not me. My brother-in-law, now that's a different story. But anyway, it's interesting you should bring up the idea of I reported for duty and the next day I got injured and they put me out. Well, you know what? That's a service-connected injury disability. If you're currently suffering from that injury, even if it was 40 years ago, you went in, you signed up with all good intention, and you got hurt. It's not like you jumped in front of the Jeep. Well, if you did, that's a different story. But no, we the people, again, made a contract with you. We said, if you don't leave healthy, we're going to compensate you for that. And part of that compensation is medical care for the rest of your life, for free for those things that hurt you. And if it's at a certain level of disability, free for everything else, whether it's service-connected or not. So the guy who went into the military with all good intention and got hurt before his first term of enlistment was up, I've got a program for you, definitely. You went in to be a clerk typist, you served 4 years, and you left. And nothing happened. But you're at a point right now where you're kind of down on your luck, and you can't necessarily afford a healthcare insurance plan. I can get you into VA healthcare. We can do an application, and even though last year you made $50,000, this year you're not. And so I can get you into the VA because everyone understands that we all fall hard sometimes.
And you spent 20 successful years. Now we're getting into our older veterans. You spent 20 or 30 years being that exception that used to be the norm. The guy who worked in the same factory or was an executive with the same corporation never gave thought about health care, and all of a sudden, wow, I wonder what this Affordable Care Act is all about, or I wonder what this repeal and replace thing will do. Obamacare is in the news every day, and what's to become of it. How does that affect what you do in your office when it comes to looking at health care options for veterans and possible connections to the VA system, or connections to the VA system relying more now on the private marketplace to get things done that formerly were only at VA institutions?
Well, under the current Affordable Care Act law that's out there, veterans and retirees, veterans are exempt from Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Their coverage is credible coverage under the Affordable Care Act. So if we have a person who retired after 24 years of service in the Marine Corps and they have their TRICARE prime insurance, and once they hit 65, they go on Medicare A and B. They have to purchase the Part B of Medicare, and then they go into the TRICARE for Life program, which is a Medicare supplement that pretty much covers 100% of whatever Medicare A and B don't pick up. And that's perfectly credible coverage under the Affordable Care Act. If you're a veteran and enrolled in the VA healthcare system, that is also credible coverage under the Affordable Care Act. And so you don't have to worry about going around and searching for a subsidized insurance plan. You are already covered.
Your own background, Nate, I think people would be interested. Tell me your background in the military and also those in your office.
Oh, goodness. So I enlisted in the United States Army Reserve while still in high school. And Desert Shield, Desert Storm while I was in college. And then I had a platoon sergeant in the reserves who came up to me one day and said, you know, Bond, you seem to be liking this Army thing. You're going to college. You need to become an officer. And I kind of hemmed and hawed, and he slammed me against the wall and said, no, you're going to become an officer. So out of sheer fear, and just following the good advice of a great man, Art Giello, who has now passed away. But he was a Vietnam vet, and you know, if he had confidence in me to become an officer, I realized I needed to try. And so I did. I went in and I signed up for the ROTC program there at the University of New Hampshire, and did the Green to Gold program, and received my second lieutenant commission in the engineer corps. I was a combat engineer, and did that for the first 10 years of my officer career. And then the Army went through a restructuring a while back under Secretary Rumsfeld, and the changeover from the divisional model to the brigade combat team model that we're now under. And under that model, the engineer battalions all went away, all the combat engineer battalions. And so I was encouraged to transition into the public affairs career field. And I did, and that was a very beneficial move for me overall. I served the remainder of my career in the public affairs career field, culminating with a position in Chicago as the Midwest Public Affairs Office Director.
And, you know, this is something I've always wanted to do with you, Nate, in our four times talking together, which is in the course of your duty, I imagine you went to whatever they call the major school or lieutenant colonel school, War College.
Commander General Staff College.
Did you do that?
I went to the Army Command and General Staff College, yes. And also I did the Defense Information School, which is kind of the Command and General Staff College is broken up into two parts. There's the intermediate level education, the core course that every Army major goes through, and then you go into your specialty fields. And my specialty field was for the Information School for Public Affairs.
You get a little history in those type of focuses, I imagine.
One or two history classes, yes. It's better to learn from somebody else's mistakes than your own. And so history is a very important part of being a military officer.
Well, let's go, because I've always wanted to ask you about some of these questions I've had. Especially this time of year, it's in July and just past Memorial Day, and looking ahead to Veterans Day. We are immersed in war movies and perspectives and documentaries. And it's hard to say there's clear-cut victories anymore with everybody weighing in on their opinion. Pretty much confirmed that World War II was about as close as you could get to a slam bang. But the darn thing lasted 4 years for us in America, and it wasn't the least bit certain from the time we first landed. Talk about the time we first landed, for example. Were we thinking it was going to be, you know, World War I all over again and very easy?
Oh, gosh, in both theaters of operation, both so the Africa, Europe, and the Pacific. So Africa, there were in the European theater of operations, there were two major strategic initiatives. One was TORCH, which was the idea of going into North Africa, and then Churchill's main, was go up through the soft belly of Europe through Italy. I guess he never studied Hannibal. and then and the other was Operation Overlord, which fortunately Eisenhower prevailed, and we invaded from England into northern France and then through. But so when we landed in Morocco and up against the Vichy French troops who didn't want to be there, who didn't like the Germans just as much as we didn't, the fighting was minimal. And so it was like, this is a cakewalk kind of thing. But then we hit the Kazarine Pass in Algeria, and now you're up against Rommel and the Desert Fox and his hardcore Nazi troops. And the 1st Infantry Division almost got wiped out. We were very close to losing the North Africa campaign right then and there.
How about the Pacific?
So in the Pacific, you know, the Marine Corps and Guadalcanal and the very first major amphibious assault landing operation, and it was a victory. It was a decisive victory, but with any more victories like that, and they would have lost the war kind of victories. You take the U.S. Army's major operation, first major operation in the Pacific was the Battle of Buna in Papua New Guinea. And again, we won. We won decisively. But with victories like that, you're going to lose the war. The Battle of Buna is known as Bloody Buna. It took a three-star general coming down onto the ground himself, Ike Eichelberger. MacArthur, Douglas MacArthur, who had escaped the Philippines by the skin of his teeth, there in Port Moresby, Australia, and called Eichelberger into his office and said, "Ike, I need you to go to Buna and don't come back." He didn't say, "Don't come back unless you win." He just said, "Don't come back," which was kind of his confidence, what was going on in Buna. But Eichelberger went there, took over the operation, and led U.S. forces, which, by the way, included the National Guard of Wisconsin. He led that force to victory there. No one was certain that we were going to be victorious. You look at the naval battles and the Battle of Midway, and if you don't believe in divine providence, read history. Carrier group versus carrier group, and if it weren't for dumb luck, and you're an Irishman, so you know that the only real luck is bad luck, if it weren't for, truly, in my opinion, divine providence, we would have lost the Battle of Midway, and we would have lost our Pacific Fleet, and we would have lost the war to the Japanese.
Battle of Midway, led by a carrier force admiral who had no experience with carriers, Admiral Spruance. From a flag admiral with two stars to the poor guy who was a farmer with bandaged feet trying to make it from Valley Forge, retreating across a river from the British, isn't the one constant in our military experience as Americans the guy or gal who didn't expect to be here, who didn't necessarily train for it, but by gosh, they're here and they have to do the job? And isn't that, when you get right down to it, really who you serve in the Veterans Service Office?
Jim, thank you, because that's exactly what it's all about. It's that young guy or gal who really laid it all on the line for his or her country. But not just for his or her country, for his buddy next to him. And, I'm going to protect you, and you're going to protect me, and we're going to win. And that kind of American never quit attitude. just don't know when to quit. And there's no such thing as quit. A little concerned these days if that attitude still exists or not, personally. I know that it does certainly exist among our veterans. Never quit. No retreat, no surrender. It's another reason why people like to hire veterans. you throw a problem at me, I'm going to solve it. And if I can't solve it, I'm going to find someone who can, and they're going to help me solve it. But I'm not just going to lay down and quit. That's not in the vocabulary. And so that kind of attitude is what it takes to be successful in life. And I'm a little worried, quite honestly, for our entire culture, where quitting seems to be the norm lately. But
going to your safe that's exactly the kind of insight I think people value in our listening audience. We are becoming a generation that necessarily no longer asks what we can do for our country, but it's what our country can do for us and how much. For those whom that was never a question, the final salute in the minute or so we have left is how you go out, how you're remembered. A lot of people don't realize that you have burial benefits and all kinds of things are available to the families of people who served for their departed veteran.
Most definitely. And so every veteran, or whether they serve in the reserve, National Guard, or active duty, does receive military funeral honors, which is the playing of taps, the presentation of the flag, and the firing of the three volleys at the graveside.